When it comes to cancer, there isn't 6 degrees of separation. There are only two. You either have cancer or you know somebody close to you that does.
This is Hearing Voices, the best of public radio from NPR, with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Larry Massett.
My name is Jeff Metcalf, and I am surviving prostate cancer. In many ways, I shouldn't be here, but I am.
Our show today is A Slight Discomfort, My Prostate Diaries, from writer Jeff Metcalf. Metcalf is an English professor at the University of Utah. A few years ago, it dawned on him, he was overdue for the checkup all 50-something men are supposed to have. You know, the prostate checkup. The slight discomfort of a physical exam, and a blood test for a warning sign called PSA, prostate-specific antigen, no big deal. Except, of course, it is a big deal because it's cancer, and it's not rare. Men don't like to think about this. When it comes to prostate cancer, Metcalf says, men are where women were with breast cancer 20 years ago. It's a huge problem, everybody knows it, but it's too embarrassing, too scary to talk about. Hence, this diary, read for us now by Jeff's friend, Paul Kiernan.
I postponed my yearly physical. I could always reschedule. I postponed the next year, and the next. Finally, my wife made an appointment for me at a new men's health center. The men's health center had been receiving, and trust me, this is the strangest part of all, great reviews by men, by the very beasts who shun light and medicine. Look at this place, will you? Posters on the wall of rock climbers in Yosemite, mountain biking in southern Utah, Lance Armstrong, the day of his 5th Tour de France triumph. Yellow jersey, arms extended to the heavens, something resembling a smile on his face. Wow. I feel healthier already. I'm Dr. Walker, like the Scotch. I don't drink. It's my worst nightmare. He's not old enough to drink. He's Doogie Howser. Worse, a Mormon. Allergic to anything? Organized religion and my mother-in-law. Way too serious. No, I'm not. Do you smoke? Only after sex. I used to smoke. A pipe. I like the smell. And never cigarettes? No. No? Is this an inquisition or a physical? Just being thorough. People lie. Do you drink? Yes. How often? Every night. How much? Red wine at dinner? My parents were alcoholics. Dead now. My sister is recovering and my brother isn't, so I am aware. Are you close to your siblings? Yes and no. Any thoughts about that? Too much booze under the bridge. Are you uncomfortable about the questions? Of course I was. Particularly the parts that dealt with my family. The actual physical part of the examination was a welcome diversion. I made it a goal to get a laugh out of Dr. Walker. Now for the part we both don't like. I'm just going to put some KY jelly on my finger and then just do it, Doc. This will be a bit unpleasant for a moment.
Quick question. Both your hands are on my shoulders, are they, Doc?
No. This kid, the doc, he started laughing. So when he composed himself, I went in for the kill. He handed me some tissues to wipe off the excess KY jelly. Your prostate feels fine. I took the Kleenex and began to wipe my eyes like I'd been crying.
I feel so cheap, so dirty. You're not going to call me in the morning, are you?
He came unglued. He had this sort of hee-haw laugh. It was a great sound. I love the sound of laughter. And I liked this young doctor a great deal. He was thorough. My blood pressure, solid. Heartbeat, strong. Cholesterol, low. The only result I had to wait for was the PSA test. I didn't exactly know what the PSA was, and I didn't really care. I felt good, close enough. Look, Ma, top of the world. A week later, I called the clinic to find out about my PSA test. Jeff, Dr. Walker wants to speak to you about your PSA. Something was wrong. I could hear it in her voice. Couldn't you just take a look? I can't. I'm not a doctor. She wouldn't budge. I tried to read between the lines. Your PSA numbers are high, Jeff. What do you mean, high? I had no idea what this meant. Was high good? No, of course not. Why would he sound alarmed?
A high PSA count. What does that mean? Was high like 1,000 or in the hundreds? I felt stupid for not knowing. Should I worry now? Didn't he tell me last week that everything looked good, felt fine? Felt good? Did he actually say felt good, or did he say he couldn't tell until he got the test back? Now I was afraid. Are you still there? Yeah. Yeah, I am. I thought my prostate felt good. It felt fine. What are my PSA numbers? Your PSA was 8. 8? 8 out of what? What's good? Are you saying I have cancer? There are other factors. Like what? My diet? Done. Say no more. I'll change it. What do I do next? You'll need to see a urologist and get a biopsy. Okay. And take your wife with you. It's important. Okay. Are you all right, Jeff? Are you okay? I'm okay. I'd become the okay man. I was certain of two things. I needed to talk with somebody who could explain the PSA numbers, and I could not mention this to my wife. I became a student of the internet. I did research. I looked up everything. I went deeper and deeper. I found myself getting punchy, moving in and out of medicine and comedy.
The prostate is a squishy gland about the size of a walnut. It sits under the bladder. The seminal vesicles are located above the prostate and create semen.
Hey, what's long and hard and carries semen?
The submarine. You get it?
These nerves run along and attach to the prostate and control erectile function.
The boner factor.
If these nerves get damaged during prostatectomy, the erection is lost.
So, if you hear the doctor say whoops during the surgery, you're screwed. I couldn't imagine this possibility. Seriously, there could be a mistake. Hell, I had no symptoms. None. I didn't fit the profile. I prayed for a miracle. Maybe I was in denial. Maybe not. Hope? That's closer. Willie Loman, a hapless man in a hopeless universe. Why me? Why not me? Why not you? Who's to say? Who's to blame? I kept going deeper into the internet, looking for miracles, personal testimonies, cures, experimental drugs, and then I found a reference to clinical castration, surgical versus medical castration. What to do when you discover you have prostate cancer? How to talk to your family? Managing the pain of prostate cancer? Urinary dysfunction? Bowel dysfunction? Erectile dysfunction. The lines began to blur. Deals have been made with the gods and with the devil. I will listen. Listen to anything. Trust me. Clinical castration. Scooping out your nuts and replacing them with chicken nuggets or ball bearings or marbles. Whatever. At this point, who really gives a rat's ass? It was way, way more than I needed to know. But I kept digging. I pulled up another article and then another and then another. There were 514,000 references to clinical castration. It was too much. Words bombarded and smothered me. I wanted to be held, to be comforted, to be embraced. And yet I kept silent. I needed to talk to my wife, but I didn't. Instead, I disappeared. I became invisible. I ran away. Perhaps I could outrun the probable, the inevitable. I resolved to keep the unknown out of my life. It was the manly thing to do. Prepared a fabulous dinner. Rack of lamb, roasted red potatoes, a pear salad with honey-glazed walnuts, and for dessert, coffee panna cotta. Mamma mia. I had to do everything in my power to keep from blurting out, "I think I have prostate cancer." "You're not eating anything." "But there's something I have to tell you. It's not going to be easy." "You're not leaving us, are you?" "No. No, nothing like that. Why would I do something like that? I'm not crazy. No, honey, no, no. This is just a matter of life or death. It, Okay, this isn't coming out right. I'm having a biopsy of my prostate tomorrow morning. I can't eat. My PSA was high. Very high. The physical was a month ago, Jeff. I should have said something sooner. The doctor thinks you might have cancer? And you've known since the physical? Yeah. And you didn't say anything about this because... Why, Jeff? I didn't want you to worry. How would you feel if I did this to you? Oh, welcome home. And by the way, I think I might have cancer. I'm sorry. I'd never do that to you. The stoic hero. You didn't need to do this.
Any questions before we begin the biopsy?
Just double-checking my notes. You're going to do a transrectal biopsy where you cram a spring-loaded gun with a razor blade up my ass and slice some samples out of my prostate 8 to 10 times. Am I correct?
Yes, you are.
Right. And I might feel a slight bit of discomfort?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I was afraid you'd say that. But please tell me that I have misunderstood this final part and that by outpatient you mean a person, a man, who, say, like me, will be out. Out cold.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay, I think we're done for the day. Why don't we just pass go, skip the biopsy, and go to surgery where I will be completely out. So imagine. I'm positioned like this. My knees are bent and drawn up toward my chest so my sphincter can see everything perfectly. What do you expect a sphincter to do? It slams shut. The doctor made several attempts to insert the gun up my rectum, but my sphincter was sending a message.
There's no way, Jeff. Jeff, no way this is going to happen.
And I could see the gun, which to me looked like something Flash Gordon might use to fend off monsters from another planet. Just relax, sphincter, please.
I don't think so.
Then the assistant said,
Would you like me to cut him, doctor?
She sounded just like Muhammad Ali's cutman, the legendary Angelo Dundee. I am begging like I've never begged before. Please, I'm almost in tears. Please, sphincter, please, just this one time. Open yourself up happily and gladly to the world of science. Do it for both of us. I relaxed. I survived the biopsy. I failed the test. I had cancer. What now, Mr. Magician? What's next?
You're listening to A Slight Discomfort, My Prostate Diaries, from Hearing Voices.
A date was set for the removal of my prostate. The night before surgery, I had an interesting dream. I was with my wife at the French Laundry in Napa Valley, Thomas Keller's restaurant. Such service, such flavors. While talking with my wife, a hand reached over and took a Parmigiano crisp filled with goat cheese mousse. The first one didn't bother me, but when it happened a second time, I grabbed the hand. This was not right. These were expensive hors d'oeuvres, even in a dream. What do you think you're doing?
I'm sorry. I've always wanted to eat at Keller's restaurant. I love his work, the sauces, his reductions and presentation. Legendary.
You had trouble getting a reservation too, huh? Bit early for a Halloween costume party, isn't it?
This isn't a costume.
Your death?
Mm-hmm.
Seriously?
Yes.
Where did my wife go? And the woman that was sitting at the table next to us? With the old guy and the wine steward?
They went back.
Without the main course? Are they crazy? You're still here.
I'm death. I'm always here. Close by.
That's funny. I'm death. That's good material.
You don't seem afraid.
Should I be? My wife's gone to powder her nose. I taste the food. The wine is fabulous. This is the aha, the moment you realize you're in a dream. Like a steamy sex dream, and all of a sudden you feel shaking, and it's your wife. Honey, please, you're humping the sideboard. And you wake up. But in this dream,
It's about food.
Please, sit down. I was going to order another bottle of wine. Join me.
I've never been invited to join anyone for a glass of wine before.
A guy like you? Get out of here.
People don't seem to like me.
Really? People don't like you? I can't imagine it.
You walk around touching people on the shoulder, they drop dead. Of course they don't like you. And then there's the outfit. Lose the look. Get rid of the hood and the side. You gotta change with the times. Did you come for me?
It's not entirely my decision. It's more complicated.
Tell me about it. Death leaned over and began to whisper something to me. Either I couldn't remember it or I didn't hear it. Just before being placed under anesthesia, I thought about mentioning this to my wife. I never got that far. Following the surgery, I floated in and out of sleep. I said outrageous things because I could. I was still on this side of the equation, and it felt good. I had oxygen tubes pushed into my nose, needles hanging from both my arms, and a saline solution and morphine drip running full speed. The space between these two states was fluid. Magic. Now I'm here. Now I'm not. Crazy dreams.
Wake up! Hey, wake up, I need to talk to you!
You're,
A penis. I'm your penis!
Look, somebody might come in and see me talking to a penis, and grown men don't talk to their penises.
Since when? Really? Recognize this voice? Not now. Captain Happy. Please. Oh, please, just a few seconds more. Go. More.
Okay, fair enough. What's this all about?
This is important stuff. I've got to think about my future.
What about me? It's not like I haven't had my hands full. I've been a bit preoccupied, as you can see.
Do you have any idea what it's like for me?
Hello? I'm the one in the hospital bed.
You haven't looked under the sheets, have you? Well, mister, this is all about me. It's about time you did.
Look, I've had a pretty serious operation, and I... Oh, my God. They've got a
3-foot length of plastic tubing, 1/4 inch in diameter, going right through my eye, up the urethra, and I'm not talking about Aretha Franklin, and going into the bladder. You remember your prostate? It's gone!
It was cancerous.
And who do you think took this place? Connect the dots here, Einstein. There was a gap the size of a golf ball, so they pulled me up to the bladder, and all of a sudden I go from being circumcised to not being circumcised, and I'm a couple of inches shorter. I look like a golf ball with a turtleneck sweater. You said nothing to me. Nothing!
I'm sorry. I didn't even say anything to my wife.
That is beyond
stupid.
I got a bit early. Next thing I know, all hell breaks loose. And there are lights and scalpels and slicing and sewing. And I come to, and they've stuck a rubber hose in my eye. I'm 2 inches shorter than I was before the surgery. And the best you can do is say you're kind of sorry. That's it. I don't deserve this. I've been working hard for you ever since you discovered me in the Boy Scouts. I was the hardest working organ in your body. Those first few years, I thought you'd kill me.
You're the most overrated organ on my body. You don't hear the brain complaining, do you?
The brain has nothing to do with it.
That's what women have been saying for years.
I have a right to know what's going on. The future has a great deal to do with me. I want to know all the facts.
You want facts? I'll give you facts. I don't know the facts, Dick. I just don't know.
I've been under a great deal of pressure. I'm sorry about the other night before the surgery. I just couldn't. Well, you know, a few false starts. But I delivered, didn't I?
Yes, you did. No apologies necessary. Hey, we're in this together.
Plus, the nuts have been all over me lately, and you know how they are.
What do you expect? They're nuts. This is exactly the reason one shouldn't do drugs.
Wake up!
What? What? Is there a fire? What? What? Who are you?
My name is Monica and I am the night nurse.
Am I going home?
Nein, you're not going home. I woke you up to give you some sleeping pills to make you fit to sleeping.
Wait, you woke me up out of a deep sleep to give me sleeping pills so I could go to sleep? This doesn't make any sense.
I don't make the rules. I just force them down you. Force them down you. Open up.
Where is the urine bag, young man? Over here, other side of the bed. That's where it's always been.
The urine bag is supposed to be on this side. This side over here. Gott in Himmel.
Look, it's no big deal. Just put it on the other side.
It's supposed to be over here.
I don't know what your problem is. This is where they place the piss bag. If you don't like it, get your own piss bag.
You will be sorry, Mr. Smarty Pants.
You will be sorry.
September 23rd. How will I talk about this disease? How brave will I be? How much am I willing to risk, and how much will I be willing to expose myself to a larger world? Silence has not served me well. I won't hold back. End of entry.
This is Hearing Voices. We'll be right back with the second half of A Slight Discomfort, My Prostate Diaries.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
Welcome back to A Slight Discomfort, My Prostate Diaries, from Hearing Voices. We continue with Jeff Metcalf's diary, read by Paul Kiernan.
October 16th. Back home. I am not a good patient. Alana set up headquarters for me in the office so I can read and work. I feel surprisingly good. Alana goes back to work. Life heads toward normal. I'm not certain what this means. Okay, honey, I'm taking off. Are you sure you'll be okay? I'm fine. You're 5 minutes away. I'll be okay. There's tuna in the fridge, and I've left you a can of soup for lunch. Call me if it's too difficult, and I'll bring something home for lunch. This was a stroke of therapeutic genius. Alana's words motivated me. Canned soup, for Christ's sakes. We don't even feed the dog canned food. The hell you say? Food brings me back. This would not do. With a little maneuvering, I was able to get out of bed.
I started cruising around the house, holding my briefcase full of piss. With the dapper and handy hook, I could hang the urine bag on a cabinet drawer while I cut vegetables. I was sautéing onions, carrots, and shallots for a French peasant soup, and instinctively, without thinking, I walked away from the stove to get some vegetable stock, and oh my God! Talk about pain. I almost passed out. God, you have to have a sense of humor to deal with this, and it isn't easy. But that night, we had a homemade peasant soup for dinner, with a mixed baby green salad, goat cheese, and a dry rosé wine. Although my life had been turned upside down, and I had very little control over the recovery, I did still own the kitchen. It was a step. The waiting room in the urology clinic is an interesting study in behavior. Vets, like myself, learn to relax. We seldom talk to each other. A nod, perhaps, maybe not. We size each other up. What's that young guy doing in here? And that guy over there with the Brooks Brothers suit? How about that young married couple? They're first-timers. I hope everything is okay for them. We keep our emotional cards close to the chest. I was called into Dr. Stevenson's office and given a clean bill of health. 4 days later, our family was together, sitting in the center of Florence at a wonderful restaurant, Cento Poveri, eating and drinking together. Cancer. On Schmancer, on Donner, on Blitzen, on Christmas Eve, we hunted the open markets of Rome until we found a freshly butchered small turkey and had a traditional Christmas dinner. The New Year in Venice, where we walked across the Ponte all'Accademia and attended a chamber concert of Vivaldi's Four Seasons. And a month later, I was back in the urology clinic visiting with Dr. Stevenson. I'd smuggled a bottle of Donna Fugata Mille e Una Notte, 1001 Nights, into the country. The grapes are harvested at night when they're plump and full. How wonderfully Italian. Welcome back, good trip. How could it not be? Italy for a month at Christmas? It was fantastic. I regaled Dr. Stevenson with stories of our wonderful misadventures in Italy. Almost as an afterthought, I asked about my PSA level. His face twitched slightly.
Your PSA is 1.6, Jeff.
Baby! Woo-hoo-hoo! Thank you, Doc. Thank you. That is music to my ears. Down 8 points to 1.6. I was thrilled. He didn't smile.
Jeff, you don't have a prostate.
The light went on. My PSA. My PSA should be zero. Don't tell me that, Stevenson.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I thought we got it all. I'm going to recommend the name of a very good oncologist.
I should have brought my wife with me. What's next, Mr. Magician? What does the magician do now? What comes out of the hat?
Pardon? Are you okay?
Damn it, Stevenson, I feel okay. Can't that be enough? I feel too good for this to be happening. Where's the cancer? Can't we cut it out? Son of a bitch, I felt great and boom, surprise, surprise.
We've already cut. It's outside the margins someplace. Cancer is like this, Jeff. We'll use radiation.
If that doesn't work,
let's take this a step at a time. I'm going to recommend an additional protocol, Jeff. Injections of a female hormone, Lupron. It shuts down the production of testosterone.
The side effects?
Diminished libido, emotional mood swings, possibility of hot flashes, weight gain and water retention, loss of muscle tone. Basically, you'll be going through menopause.
To stay alive, I would have to become a woman. We'd slashed, and now we'd burn. For the first time in this journey, I feel impotent and alone. Truly alone. Tomorrow I meet my oncologist to chart out a course of radiation. Emotionally, I'm bankrupt. End of entry.
William? William Metcalf?
I don't like my first name. It is William. William after my mother's brother. William after my father's brother. William after my grandfather's middle name. So I'm very careful that on any forms I make notations that says I prefer to go by Jeff.
William. William Metcalf, the doctor will see you now.
I go by Jeff, William Jeff. It's circled onto the chart. It can't be that difficult. It's Jeff. Go by Jeff. Hello, William. My name is Dr. Dandy. I'll be filling in for my partner. You have a 30% chance of survival. Who the hell do you think you're talking to? Did you even look at my chart? Did you? What is my damn name? The one circled and underlined in not one, not two, but three different brilliant colored highlighters. It's Jeff. Call me by my name. Is that too much to ask? You want me to go outside and come back in? Leave, now. Come back in when you have the decency to get my name correct. Is that too much to ask? And what is it with you walking in here and telling me I have a 30% chance of survival? Honest to God, man, what a horrible way to talk to me, or anybody else for that matter. I'm sorry, Jeff, but the facts for your type of cancer suggest... Look, I don't give a rat's ass what they suggest. Don't you get it? This isn't a mathematical jigsaw puzzle. This is my life, and you treat me with respect, or... This is where the moment became instructive. Or I can guarantee you a 90% chance I will kick your ass. Am I clear? I don't exactly know what you want me to say. Treat me with respect. Treat me like a man who's afraid of what has happened to him. Treat me like a man who wants to be above ground. And I want you to suggest the most aggressive approach that medicine has to offer for the treatment of this cancer. I don't want statistics. I want possibilities. Offer me something. How would you want this treated if it were you? Let's start there. Research suggests 8 weeks of radiation with Lupron injections. I've done the research. I agree. One other question for you. Would you be my oncologist? After the way we started, why? I did my homework. You have a great reputation. A terrible bedside manner. But you are a teaching doctor. I'm a teacher. It's important to me. January 15. I am sick and tired of medical and insurance forms. Forms for insurance. Forms for one's medical history. Privacy forms. Payment forms. Swear to God you won't sue us forms. Even if we make a mistake forms. Release forms. And on and on and on. Today I was processed and prepped at the Huntsman Cancer Center. It is a beautiful center with a stunning view out across the Great Salt Lake Valley. It feels hopeful. Today, while I was changing into a hospital gown, this stranger started talking to me. He looked like the Marlboro man. It caught me off guard.
What are you in for? What kind of cancer you got?
Prostate cancer.
That's a good cancer if you gotta have one.
There's nothing good about it. About any of it.
I suppose you're right.
You?
Lung cancer. Don't look good.
You smoke. I saw you outside.
I never could give it up. Tried, but never took. Life's a bitch, then you die.
Bullshit. Life isn't a bumper sticker. It's not that easy or that simple. You're still smoking. He had cancer by choice. I didn't.
Well, I'll be going to hell. That's telling it like it is. My name's Bill. Bill Carney.
Jeff. Jeff Metcalf. We shook hands. Inside the radiation room, I was placed on a clear glass table covered with a series of white grid lines. It's almost like graph paper. The lights had been turned down low. The mechanical hummings and whirrings of the X-ray machine became an eerie early morning chorus. A robotic arm from the X-ray machine circled my body, spinning a fine web of laser light around me. The exact position of my lower abdomen, penis, and scrotum were being bombarded and cataloged into a giant computer. I am being mapped, recorded, memorized, converted into an equation, stored in a memory bank. The table feels cold against my skin. I'm naked except for a small loincloth covering my midsection. I close my eyes. I try to imagine the touch of my wife on me. I'm having a difficult time of things, trying to stay on top of this. I've never felt so helpless or alone. Fluorescent lights go on. I blink. LeVar and an assistant enter from the war room. They've been watching me from the safety of concrete and lead walls. They have plotted my radiation charts. Am I done then?
Did the doctor mention what was going to happen today?
He was sort of vague. Let's see, my notes read, the technicians will walk you through the procedure, blah, blah, blah. Oh, here it is. It will be necessary to inject or insert, I can't make it out because I was so nervous, a camera through my penis or inject my penis with some sort of radioactive dye to see if my bladder is healed enough for radiation.
That's pretty close.
See, this is exactly why my wife should have been with me. She would have taken careful notes. Always bring somebody when you visit the doctor so they can take notes for you. A second pair of ears is essential. After a visit to the doctor's office, my wife and I would compare notes. I might record this. Mr. Metcalf, we're going to go through your anus, cut off your balls, take an electric drill, implant a stereo system and an electric fan that will simultaneously cool off your blah, 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 yak, yak, yak. And one last thing, Mr. Metcalf, it will be painful beyond your wildest imagination. My wife, having heard the exact conversation, would then read her notes. Okay, Jeff, remember, no fluids after 10 p.m., and make certain to wear comfortable clothes to the outpatient procedure.
So you're a professor. What do you teach?
I have two choices here. I could tell him that I teach English, to which he would probably reply,
God, that was my worst subject in school.
Or I can make something up more outrageous. I am a professor of the martial arts, with an emphasis in the killing by the use of my hands.
You ever kill any students?
Several.
Awesome.
Tell me your version of what you think you're going to do to me.
We're going to take the syringe filled with a tracer chemical and inject it through the head. Stop.
Right there, LeVar. Look, gentlemen, and I truly hope you are gentlemen, there must be some kind of mistake.
Everybody with prostate cancer gets it done. I've even written a rap song about it. You want to hear it?
I need to go on the record here, LeVar. First, understand that I mean no disrespect. But if you, or any of you, attempts to go up my penis with anything at all, a fiber optic camera, a digital camera, an Ansel Adams 8x10 box camera with a tripod, or anything that remotely resembles a camera or a syringe, and I am not completely unconscious, I will kill you. With my bare hands, I will claw your eyes out, rip your heads off, use it as a bowling ball. And I apologize, seriously, but I thought I should warn you.
Okay, right. Let's see then. Would you excuse us for a moment, Professor Metcalf?
They returned to the war room to discuss the matter. I could hear them. They'd left the speaker on.
Any thoughts? He looked curious. He's a professor of martial arts with an emphasis on killing.
Dude, he killed some students.
Gentlemen, thank you for your insight. Would you see if we can find something to restrain him?
I allowed them to strap me to the table. And the minute they cinched the last strap down, I felt like Ulysses and the Sirens. Panic found me. I didn't want to be tied down. Would you please untie me? I was just kidding. Seriously, I'd never hurt any of you. I'm not a professor of martial arts. Look it up on the internet. I teach literature of the American West and creative writing. They completed the necessary tasks quickly and efficiently. I honestly felt very little discomfort. If it's not too much to ask, could I get one of you to unstrap me?
We're going to have you relax a bit while we check the x-rays to make certain we get everything before we unstrap you. We'll dim the lights, put on some music.
They darken the room, hit the start button on the CD player.
Mother of God! Captain and Tennille, isn't cancer enough?
You're listening to A Slight Discomfort, My Prostate Diaries, from Hearing Voices.
February 14. I'm halfway through my radiation treatments. The staff continues to ask me if I'm getting tired, if I've lost my appetite. I haven't. It confuses them, so I lie. Yes, I'm getting tired. Last night in the study, I took off my clothes and stood naked in front of the mirror. The Lupron injections are killing me. I've lost my body and pubic hair. I'm between worlds. I'm disappearing as a man and becoming a woman. Even working out, I'm losing muscle tone. I'm very depressed. March 6th. At my radiation treatment today, I walked by Bill Carney. I didn't recognize him. The Marlboro man has become a hollow shell. The chemo-radiation combination has been brutal. He is the color of death.
Just walk by, Professor. Don't say nothing.
Beg your pardon?
It's me.
Bill? How you doing?
Not good. I'm gonna quit all this.
You can't.
Who's to say? It should be me.
Bill, we're almost done. It's a couple more weeks.
I ain't the same. I'm done, Professor.
March 13th. Bill Carney wasn't in the locker room. I asked one of the male nurses about him. I'm looking for Bill, Mr. Carney, Bill Carney. Has he been in for treatment today? I have a book of poetry for him. He died. Bill Carney? The man was here last week. I know who he was. He just quit. Sometimes people just give up. Damn it. You're talking about a man here, a friend of mine. Don't you ever talk about anybody just quitting. What the hell do you really know about Bill Carney? Any of us, huh? Jeez, I'm sorry. I didn't mean anything. That night, I had a fitful dream. I was sitting at a blackjack table in Vegas playing 21. A dealer was giving me sweet cards. I was winning. Booze was flowing. Scotch, good stuff. I picked a hot table. It was electric. People were gathered around me. The house brought in a cooler. A new dealer, someone to cool down the table, to take the heat off the cards.
Good evening, sir.
Is it? Hard to tell in here without clocks.
Touché. You've had the cards tonight.
I'd like to keep it that way. It's gotten a bit cold since you sat down. I think I'll cash in.
Poor choice of words around me.
How so?
You don't recognize me, do you?
We've never met. I'm good with faces.
I followed your advice.
People don't like me.
And if I remember correctly, you said, I said, you walk around touching people on the shoulder and they die. You're death.
You gave me good advice. I appreciate it.
Look, I had my teeth capped.
I've felt good about myself lately.
Glad I could help.
You still smell. There's no need to be rude. I was trying to thank you.
It's what you are, what you do. You can't change it. Are you here for me? Simple question.
It's not that easy. I tried to tell you that before. I'm death.
You're a dream.
You're not afraid.
No.
People lie.
We die in many ways.
Ah, it's just a matter of time.
You think this is a game? Okay, cut the cards. Winner takes all.
Your odds aren't good.
I've heard that before. Sooner or later, you'll lose. Cut the cards.
If not now,
a queen.
Queen of hearts. Your turn.
I cut the deck, selected a card, pushed it toward death, and walked away.
Come back. You didn't look.
Flip the card over. Don't walk away from me. This is not how this game is played. Come back or I'll flip this card over. You can't make up your own rules. Come back now. March 27th. Until today, I had no idea what a hot flash was like. I do now. I remember when Dr. Stevenson told me they might be uncomfortable. I was thinking, right, like, oh, hot flashes, I'm so afraid. Bring them on.
I'm a man, M-A-N, and I can deal with little old hot flashes. Good God, man, I had no idea. Hot flashes, please take them back. One is enough. Women of the world, we are not worthy. I apologize. I had no idea. In short, I've been going through a male version of menopause, or more appropriately, womanopause. That sounds like an Irish disease. Right, Clancy, Metcalf is suffering from the old womanopause. Oh, my body is truly messed up. A month ago, I had hairy legs, hair on my chest, and a 36-inch waist and muscle tone. Now, I'm having hot flashes, retaining water, losing muscle tone, buying shoes like they're going out of style, and getting emotional over the most incidental things. Not only that, but I have absolutely no sexual appetite. Seriously. It's been frightening. If somebody held me hostage, put me in a room with Catherine Zeta-Jones and said something like, "If you don't make hot monkey love to this woman, we're going to kill you." I'm afraid I'd have to say, "I guess you'll have to kill me. But before you do, could you find out where she got her pumps?" I've played tennis with the same group of men for over 20 years. After Sunday morning tennis, one of them looked at my legs. "Good God, Metcalf, you've been shaving your legs?" "Bike racing? I'm training for a couple of citizens' races this summer. Lance Armstrong benefit, you know?" "Right. Serve them up." During this time, I began to understand the coded language of women who were experiencing menopause. I'd become a guest in the feminine world. I listened carefully to the language of women. I'd been privy in ways to a part of their world. At a party, I might hear, "Is it hot in here or just me?" I know what that means. A woman is second-guessing her body. The thermostat is broken, unreliable, and she is doing the thing women do better than men could ever hope to do. She is asking for reassurance. She is calling out to her sisters to respond. They will answer her without judgment or reservation because women are not afraid to talk with each other. And in this response will be a code that either confirms or denies a betrayal of her body. You're not alone, sister. You are not alone. In many ways, I shouldn't be here. But I am. I have been cut open, burned by radiation, injected with a hormone that has rendered me impotent, and I've suffered from bouts of deep depression. I'm 2 years out of radiation, and I don't know if I'll be impotent for the remainder of my life. It's a possibility. And it cripples me. Still, it could be worse. I feel fortunate I haven't had to deal with diabetes or MS or a thousand other debilitating diseases that people live with from day to day. Men, get your PSA checked. It's a simple blood test. Women, if you can't get your man to get his PSA checked, cut him off. We might be slow, but we are not stupid. Extend the brotherhood. We are not alone. We are not alone. Tonight, I'm going out to dinner with my family. My daughter is home for a month. We'll celebrate, eat at our favorite Italian restaurant, Cucina Toscana. We know the owner. He has something special he wants us to try. And we will.
My name's Jeff Metcalf, and I'm the real Jeff Metcalf. The piece that you just heard was read by an actor, Paul Kiernan, who plays me in A Slight Discomfort, My Prostate Diaries. And the more he's performed this, the more we start to not only physically look alike, but sound alike. So I'm very concerned about coming home some night and finding him in bed with my wife, because I would probably have to kill him, but I don't know if I would be killing myself or Paul, the actor. But Jeff Metcalf, prostate cancer survivor, is above ground. and it's a wonderful thing. Every day that I'm above ground is a bonus, but I think it's a little sweeter these days. Unfortunately, my PSA numbers have gone back up, and so I'm in a serious knife fight with prostate cancer. I understand what I have, and I'm not a foolish man. It's almost like this is happening in somebody else's body. You know, I'm the host for the cancer, but it just doesn't feel like that. You know, it's odd. It's something that I'm wrestling with. We've taken this play on the road, and it's very portable. It's a man, a music stand, and me, and the actor, Paul. And one thing that we see over and over again in performances, we've done performances in people's homes, we've done them in bars, which is interesting, we've done them at the American Cancer Society here, and there's a resounding chorus of men that say at the end of this, I'm so glad you did this because you're right, we don't talk to each other. And it's true, men don't talk to each other. Women get there faster, quicker, and go deeper than we do, and men, we've got to start talking about this. I highly recommend that men that are listening to this and sort of don't know where to go should look at Hearing Voices website. I have a top 10 pick of, I think, websites for prostate cancer and education about prostate cancer that might help out. It's worth taking a look because there's so much information on the internet. You can be overwhelmed and just give up. These are good starts, good foundations. So please take a look at it. The website is hearingvoices.com.
You've been listening to A Slight Discomfort, My Prostate Diaries, from Hearing Voices. Our show was written by Jeff Metcalf, read by Paul Kiernan, and produced by myself, Larry Massett, and Scott Carrier. The music is from the band Parasiti. You'll find more information and links at our website, hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.